All right. Our first story, or at least interview of this particular hour, will be with Peter Louis Myburgh. He is a journalist at Daily Maverick, as well as the guy who literally wrote the book on the man who of the hour, Gangster State. And he also wrote The Republic of Gupta. Gangster State, of course, was a very interesting account of the years of activity within the Free State and surrounds under Ace Magashule's perspective. And it is appropriate for us to be speaking to Peter Louis insofar as Ace Magashule is taking center stage amongst the top six in the ANC, saying, name one ANC member that hasn't done business with the state when people have called out PPE corruption or at least participation by members of that particular party. Peter Louis joins us to contextualize Mr. Magashule, especially as he plays an ever more visible role within the party.
Breakfast with Refilwe Moloto on Cape Talk.
Peter Louis, welcome to Breakfast with Refilwe. How are you today?
Well, I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Thank you. Okay, so, you know, after President Ramaphosa's spokesperson, Kusela Diko, and her husband, I suppose, got a great deal of attention with respect to PPE contracts and others, the ANC seems to have been wading in quite significantly, more so than we've seen in the recent months. I mean, I think the ANC has been quite quiet in recent months, but they seem to have begun speaking up about their perspective on how they should conduct themselves as individuals with vis-a-vis contracts. And then last week we saw a contradictory statement from Mr. Magashule. Can you frame for us exactly the ANC's position on members and their family members participating in government business?
Yeah, so I think the discussion and the debates around that issue really points to or is at the heart of the fractured nature of the ANC at the moment. So there certainly hasn't been a unified voice when it comes to what the party's position should be in terms of senior party members and government officials and their families doing business with the state. So it is quite interesting to note that initially, really, around the Diko matter, the party wasn't that quick to respond nationally. The ANC in Gauteng, of course, was quite quick to pounce on that issue and suspend or at least put people on voluntary leave quite quickly. But as the matter kind of expanded and became a national issue, with more and more ANC individuals and their families becoming involved in the issue, it became quite clear that it was a problem that the party was not going to ignore, but it was always going to be an issue of how it responded to it. And then, of course, it becomes very clear that the party is essentially speaking from two mouths on the issue. We know at very heated NEC meetings, for instance, there were arguments and fights over what the party's official position would be, and there's no indication that it's been resolved yet. There's no unified voice. There's certainly one element of the party, one faction that broadly centers around President Ramaphosa, who came out and opposed the idea of party members doing business with the state or their families, and then those who are aligned, broadly aligned to SG Magashule, who contend that there's nothing wrong with it as long as there's no undue influence by the party members themselves.
Which, of course, has been shown to be very difficult to control in the history of South Africa. Let's talk a little bit about Ace. Sorry, go ahead and answer.
Yeah, no, just absolutely, I concur. You know, I think the devil always lies in the detail. I think it's quite easy for a party member to kind of broadly say that, there's arm's length and they weren't involved in the process. But because of the Gupta leaks and so many other, detailed indications of corruption, we know that, the influence is only a phone call away. Or a nudge or a wink or a back channel discussion. So we know the influence is there. It becomes very difficult to separate the party official from the contract at the end of the day.
So, Peter Louis, let's talk a little bit about Ace, if we may. You know, you just presented an excellent case around the ANC itself, even if we're just speaking at the provincial level. And you pit the two big players on two opposite camps, or at least the centers of the two camps, as the president and Ace Magashule. Now, previously, one would speak factionally about the Zuma camp versus the Ramaphosa camp. So it speaks very much to the rise in power of Ace Magashule. And as I say, you wrote the book on the guy. You speak about it being a whisper away, but if one wanted to exert influence. But he has had, and I've read your book, it's fantastic, but he's had far firmer tentacles than just a whisper. He doesn't need that much.
Absolutely. You know, so I think during his years of his reign in the Free State presents an excellent case study of how capture, you know, works, you know, especially political capture, which was kind of associated with this idea of state capture of the Gupta families and those kind of players. But, you know, certainly in Mahashule's case, we now understand that capture is something that can be executed from a political office too. Because in that decade, you know, more or less a decade between 2011, there certainly was, you know, this pattern whereby powerful business people aligned to Mahashule increasingly became the preferred bidders on state contracts. Then later on, you know, this also became his own family members. You know, in that
his
decade,
daughter, as I recall.
His daughter, his sons, other family members. So, you know, that really lies at the heart of the matter. And increasingly critics were beginning to wonder whether, you know, this is just a case of these individuals being good business people or whether Mahashule's influence was resulting in them getting the contracts. And then, you know, that argument was strengthened by very clear indications that on some occasions, Mahashule certainly became involved in these contracts. You know, we know some of the housing contracts his daughter was involved in. He was literally on the scene when these deals were concluded. And certainly that also goes with a couple of his other business associates.
So what does that imply about the direction that the ANC is taking? If his is a power hand, a powerful hand, and his is a history of doing things in this way, what are we to make of the loud pronouncements of condemnation and, you know, the voluntary leave that is being demanded by this party?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, firstly, it's highly problematic and I suppose troubling that Mahashule's defense would be that show me one government leader who hasn't become involved in these kind of dealings. Certainly not taking the moral high ground there. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, it paints a picture of a party that's always been associated with patronage networks. You know, we've seen this play out. You know, it's not only my research that points to it. There's an excellent book, of course, called War Party, that points to similar sort of patronage networks in KwaZulu-Natal. You know, Crispian Olver's book on Port Elizabeth, How to Steal a City, also points to the party being intimately involved with the practice of ensuring that tenders, you know, it's this issue of government tenders, always landing in the hands of individuals who would be willing to support a party again. And if you frame it like that, you know, I suppose at the end of the day, it becomes an issue not of, you know, a business people willingly supporting a party, but effectively a kickback system, a very elaborate and disturbing kickback system that not only keeps the party in power and ensure that there's, you know, enough money in its war chest for electioneering efforts, but also, you know, enriching people with a vast amount of money being channeled to them through tender processes and ultimately robbing the taxpayer, because we know from research that these contracts are frequently inflated and come at quite a exorbitant cost to taxpayers.
Peter Louis, we're out of time, really, but I mean, I would love just a final takeaway on this, because I think this is critical. That it's become the buzzword now, you know, PPE contracts, corruption, and even as the ANC is sort of speaking of it as if corruption just showed up with COVID-19 PPE, but it feels as though this is going to become the political football of debate for some time, and probably ground zero for the direction of the ANC. The struggle that I have at the moment, of course, is that the oversight, for example, which was initially given to the SIC by the president and is now being co-opted by six ministers over and above the eight agencies that were put forward. This is clearly a way of life, and we've also seen many deaths within this party. This is existential. Rooting out corruption with respect to contracts, would, I imagine, it's not an exaggeration to say, would decimate the ANC in the way that it currently functions. And so they'll be holding onto it quite tight. What must we make of this as voters, as citizens, as taxpayers?
No, firstly, I think we should be skeptical of the formation of any further panels or organizations or bodies. South Africa is a country with a strong legislation or set of legislation that dictates how we should deal with corruption. We have law enforcement bodies and the National Prosecuting Authority that should be dealing with that. to now establish another, you know, ANC-centered body to essentially to supposedly deal with this is questionable, in my opinion. We should let the law take its course. Nothing more required than that. You know, we have the mechanisms in place. And I think, you know, the public is becoming quite skeptical in that regard. We've had a Zondo Commission, we've had a Sariti Commission on the arms deal, several other such panels and commissions. But South Africans' desire to see is quite simply for individuals who loot public resources, especially during a time of a pandemic, to be locked up and to, you know, serve prison terms. I think nothing further is required. So definitely, if you look at social media trends over the last couple of weeks, this is an issue that is severely, harming the ANC's image and reputation. And it'll be quite interesting to see if that sentiment carries through to, for instance, next year's local elections in 2021, to see if we have a repeat of the, you know, disastrous losses the party suffered in 2016 at that year's local elections.
All right. Peter Louis, thank you very much. Peter Louis Meiberg is journalist at Daily Maverick. He's the author of Gangster State and The Republic of Gupta.